the best teacher in the best school in Austin, Texas, just told us not to send our children in traditional school because they'd be chained to a desk and lectured to all day. And so that was really the start of starting over with Acton Academy.
Never quit. Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching. And please go hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we get to our very special guests, let's kick it off with our Patreon question of the day, which is, when is the appropriate time to start setting up for Christmas?
I was going to start a war in here.
I have a very strong opinion about that.
That was the only question you could come up with. You know, that's the one that's going to start a war in here.
I didn't come up with it.
I am a day after Thanksgiving person. I feel like you have to celebrate Thanksgiving in true fall decor. And then Christmas goes up the day after.
I'm with you on that.
I would say somewhere after 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve. That's when my shopping usually starts.
Yeah, so, like most men.
So honestly, I get fired up in the summer. I'm like, I'm going to get my present shot. I kind of think like that. And then mid-December, I'm like, you know what? Nobody wants a present from me. I'm not going to do anything. And then that last moment, I'm like, oh, damn. I probably need to. There needs to be an app store or some kind of store that only, like a fireworks stand. It pops up just for guys like me and you, yeah. Right? It has a bag full of stuff. And if you walk in with it, you're good to go. You
know, unfortunately, if we let Laura Melanie design that, it'll be a bag full of diamonds. And I'm not sure what you and I would put in the bag. But it could be
buy one, get 11 free. Yeah,
or our own vending machine, like the Red Box.
Yeah. Hey,
man, you get jammed up on Christmas Eve, man. We got you.
That's a good one.
Okay, so I grew up. Same way. October, like Halloween is October. I even remember being in grade school when the teachers would change the decorum in the classroom. And then when Thanksgiving rolled around, the seasons changed and the best meal of the year is there. Mm-hmm. And you get to see your family, which is either chaos or a great time. And then 1 month after that, someone brings you presents. So, yeah. I got to separate it too.
Yeah. After Thanksgiving, for sure.
I think if you get too much of it, you lose the side of it, right?
Yeah, if you have 2 months of Christmas, you get tired of it.
See, I kind of disagree with that.
Oh.
Nobody asked you.
I personally...
kid's still in his 20s. Yeah. Trying to talk.
Personally, I love to set up like early November, just like put up a Christmas tree, decorate the house a little bit. I don't know. I just love Christmas so much that I just want to keep it around as long as I can. And then it usually goes until maybe February is whenever I take the tree down.
Oh no.
Wow.
Hunter, when you have young children and start to put together Christmas presents, your view may change just like
that. Yeah.
It's too much can happen in 2 months for Christmas for presents to be under the tree.
Exactly.
And, I mean, yeah. Now that you think about it.
Yeah.
That's an electric bill. Imagine an electric bill for 2 months too. Cause I mean, we go all out over here. Yeah. That's dad logic right there. Like, yeah, no. The seasons change in 2 months as well.
I may also just be a little too lazy to take down the tree.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's get this started. We are so excited to have y'all on today. I mean, I've known y'all for a long time, but I have been behind your backs studying about the Acton Academy because I'm just amazed by it. I love the idea of it. And I follow several of the Acton schools. It's just one of those things that I'm just like, gosh, I wish there was one around here for our little ones to go to. But if you want to start that's where we're going to get to. If you want to start a little bit further back, tell us where y'all grew up, how y'all met, and just give us a little background on your story.
I'll let you start with that.
Okay. I grew up kind of all over the place. I'm a preacher's kid. I was born in California, lived in Washington State, New Jersey, and then we went to Oklahoma. I ended up going to high school with Jeff's younger sister, so that's how I got connected to his family. Then I left Oklahoma and went to Nashville and New York and London, and then back to Oklahoma. And he and I met at a party, and he said he had front row tickets to Jimmy Buffett in Nashville, and did I want to go? And I thought, yes, I do want to go see Jimmy Buffett in Nashville. So I didn't know him. I only knew his sisters, but that was our first date. And I pretty much moved to Texas 6 months after we met. And it's been a party ever since then.
Yeah. And the red flag should have been that I was such a loser. I had front row tickets to Jimmy Buffett in the night before, no date. So that should have been a tip off of sorts.
I don't know. I feel like you could have been a spur of the moment guy like me too, yeah. You know, because that's pretty smooth. I mean, that's a good one because it's right. That's a perfect concert for a first date. Actually, God bless that man.
Yeah totally.
What year was that?
Well, if you fast forward to the, start of the Acton Academy story, we had a daughter who was older, but two young boys who just come through Montessori, and they were ready to go into regular school. And so I went to see the very best teacher in Austin at our daughter's school. And I said, when should we move the boys into traditional school? And he said, well, you know, once they've had that kind of freedom, they won't like to sit chained to a desk, because you should move them as soon as possible. And I thought about it, and I said, well, I don't blame him. And this great teacher looked down at the ground, and then he looked up, and he had tears in his eyes, and he shook his head, and he very quietly said, I don't either. And I went home that day, and I told Laura, I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to either homeschool or start a school, but the best teacher in the best school in Austin, Texas, just told us not to send our children in traditional school because they'd be chained to a desk and lectured to all day. And so that was really the start of starting over with Acton Academy.
Yeah.
With a blank sheet of paper.
Right. Because I looked at Jeff, I said, I'm not homeschooling. That's just not, that wasn't in my blood at all.
You didn't do that.
No.
Back in the day, those kids, look, private school kids had a reputation. Remember, you're like, yes. You went to a private school? And then one phase past that was the homeschool kids. You didn't even drive past their house. Remember that? That was the thing. We didn't even know. We didn't even get a chance to get to know them. And then after homeschooling, we homeschooled too. You're like, wait a minute.
We did it for 1 year. I was a private school kid. Marcus was a public school kid. So we have different opinions on that.
Well, I'm just
thinking all public school kids.
That's what I'm saying. That's what we think in the public school. Yeah. It's rough out there. It's a jungle. You know what I'm talking about?
Totally. Yeah. So I said, I'm not doing that. I didn't want to be my kid's mom and coach and teacher and activity director or whatever you do as a homeschooler. I admire someone who can do that. I wanted a community. I wanted to build something from scratch. So we literally said, if you could build your dream learning experience, what would it look like? And we pulled together things we really trusted. The Socratic method. Jeff had been teaching basically the Harvard Business School style of the case method in a business school he had started. I came from a long line of teachers really focused on the Montessori method. So I love the idea of mixed ages and moving the adult out of the center of the experience to be more of a guide and letting the work be hands-on, real-world problem solving. And then we just started playing around with ideas and projects. And the bottom line we had, though, was we wanted the narrative of the experience to be the hero's journey. And so that's the thing that has never changed. We've experimented all the way along, but all the time, the narrative of the Acton Academy is that an ordinary person hears a call, sets out on an adventure, wrestles monsters, has mentors and guides seeking a treasure all the way. And they may or may not get the treasure, but they return home a changed person, ready to share their new ideas and character with the world around them. And then they set off on a new adventure again. So,
well, yeah, and as Marcus knows, is better than anyone on the planet, you know, our definition of a hero wasn't a celebrity or something prestigious. Heroes get knocked down and they get back up and they walk into the fight. That's what a hero does. Every time they get knocked, they may not win, but yeah, they're going to get back up.
Well, and the great thing that we was a surprise to us is what that hero's journey template really does is distinguish hero versus victim. And yeah, so any child at an acting academy starts claiming the identity of a hero. And like Jeff said, that's not someone who wins all the time. It's someone who gets back up after they fall down.
That's not what that means at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that is an issue that you see in today's world is this huge victim mentality. It's everywhere. I mean, it's,
yeah,
that's like,
and the idea is, yeah, the hero, when there's a problem, takes responsibility and starts problem solving, whereas a victim tries to find the blame, put the blame on somebody else. A hero, when things get really hard, they keep going, they push through, whereas a victim quits because it's just too hard. So that story resonates with children, and they hear hero story after hero story after hero story. So by the time they've been through an acting academy, you know, 12 years in, they have this memory bank of ways that people have worked through problems, and their gritty decision-making gets solidified more and more with the more hero stories that they hear over the years.
Yeah, and just to fast forward, today we now have 350 Acton Academy campuses in 42 states and 26 countries. So we never intended to have even a middle school.
That's awesome. Back to what you said, though, because there's a difference between getting your butt whipped on those journeys and feeling like a victim. Yeah. It's like running an obstacle course or running any race or doing anything we do. And when you get beat up because of it, you feel bad. That's not what we do. This whole place is our obstacle course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we talk really, we talk a lot about the struggle and the failure and the monsters you're going to meet. And there's three big monsters that starting at age six, we start wrestling with, and they are victimhood, like we just talked about, resistance when you're just scared to take that first step, and distraction. And that's just a huge monster we have to deal with. So lots of the monsters out there in the world are internal. And so these young people start figuring out what tools and recipes and antidotes do they have to fight that internal monster when you just want to quit, or you're just like so distracted, you can't focus.
And I'll tell you, when you get children inspired, equipped, and connected with each other in a tribe, it is unbelievable what they can do.
Sure.
The biggest takeaway is they are
sure.
Yeah, they can just, they're capable of so much.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of the story. It's been a, you know, it's always a hot mess. It's been a stumbling forward at every step. Almost all of the owners of the different campuses are people like us, entrepreneurs that, you know, have gone out and done something in the world. And it's just been a real blessing.
So with the Acton Academy, what grade does it go to?
It goes from pre-K all the way through high school.
Oh, it does go all the way through high school.
Yeah. Now, most of the campuses start out at a young age. You start out with 10 or 12 elementary aged or preschool aged, and then you grow over time. But we've got a lot of campuses now that, you know, have 130, 140 learners from K through 12.
Are you incorporating sports with it? Or are you
There's a lot of sports and physical activity. It's amazing when you're learning really quickly how much you can fit in a day without the day being busy. And so there's a lot of time for outdoor play, free play, almost like, you know, when we grew up in neighborhoods. If you grew up in a neighborhood in Magnolia or in Abilene, Texas, you played with your friends. There's a lot of that kind of play. And then there's a lot of organized sports, too. So, you know, the very best players, and we've had some NCAA champion athletes, they'll, and even one pre-Olympic athlete, they'll tend to go to club sports, because they don't even play on high school teams. They're so good. And then the rest of, you know, most of the acting learners will be in some small school league where everybody gets to play.
What's changed now from back in the day? Used to be you'd have to get on the high school so the college would see you.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
No.
At all, matter of fact.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about with the kids, the best part, and someone had to explain it to me, and they used the word sin to do it. Like, hey, man, we're always trying to apologize for our sins and everything like this. And sin means some of that stuff is stitched into you, okay? And when you hit a certain age, like I Sir, I got one fixing to go through puberty, two of them actually. So I've been having to map this whole thing down, and it's hey, look, some of that stuff, there's the our nervous systems, right? The fight, the feed, and the breed. That naturally turns on in there. And if some of them suckers got a motor, and I mean, it's almost like when they say you got to break it apart to teach them, hey, like, I'm not yelling at you. I know this is, I just want to tell you, this is happening. And what you try, what a good person tries to do, what I love the Stoic model too. I studied it in the teams and I study it now. It's just like, hey, I've tried to teach you how to control this damn thing. Yeah. Because if you get into any environment, sometimes if we get fired up, there's some things over there that like that quiet. And if you get too loud, it'll kill them. And with the mentality that we have is like, hey, teach that kid to sit in any environment like he belongs there. Yeah. And I was like, that's a good way of approaching that.
Well, and I think what's really powerful, we seldom have an adult in authority. In fact, we'll go a week or longer and no adult will even walk into a middle school studio. But that's because everyone's learning from each other. And Marcus, to your point, it's one thing for an adult to kind of come in and sometimes you need nurturing, you need to be picked up. Sometimes your big brother needs to just pick you up and say, get back in the fight. Or your big sister needs to do that. And so it's amazing to see these young people hold each other accountable and kind of and encourage each other, but also be tough with each other when it's time. The tribes and the kind of the way they learn to self-manage and self-govern is by far the most powerful thing that comes out of acting. The academics are pretty easy and they do really well in that. That turns out to be trivial when compared to self-management and self-governance.
Is it hard?
I think we get in the way of that.
Absolutely.
We absolutely get in the way of that. That's why they look at us differently. There's something happens with the facial or whatever. I mean, Alexander was in his 20s when he took this whole place down. Most all of them guys were young. Can you imagine if the old people were 40? How active and violent this place would be with that kind of mentality running around? I mean, we saw what happened. Yeah. We recorded it. We got the history. We saw what happened.
100%. Yeah. And we started apprenticeships at 10 or 11 years old because back in the revolutionary days, there were teenagers that were in command of warships. So why should
absolutely
that I tell them to do the same thing? Right. And I'll tell you, when you see these young people come out, they can do that. And they're incredible. And by the way, IQ doesn't matter at all. It helps to be smarter. I'd like to be as tall as Marcus, but I'm not. But really, you've got to do what you can do. And it turns out that IQ is so overrated because it's perseverance and grit and getting along with people. That's what really matters.
Yeah, IQ, that's just what you're equipped with when you come in.
Yeah,
that has no bearing on what I can stick in that sucker, what you can download on it. Matter of fact, when you do it that way, it's like iron. It hits harder. And those suckers remember. I mean, because there's a difference between having it already in there and then trying to apply it. That's where that mind, body, spirit comes in. You have to put that stuff together. And at a young age, I mean, you're right. When you said that, I don't ever think about that. But those ship captains, you're talking about kids running this place at 12 and 13. And mean and can get violent. These kids these days, if you don't discipline them suckers, you see what happens. They're the ones that can be dangerous.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because people say, so how do you discipline kids at an acting academy if there's not an adult in charge? Well, one of the very first thing that happens when you come into a studio is what we call our classrooms is the young people together write a contract. They make promises to each other for what will be the boundaries that we don't cross as a group. And then they all sign it. And then they're in charge of holding each other accountable to the covenant that they've agreed upon. And if someone just keeps stepping over the line over and over, the group asks them to leave. So the peers write the rules and hold each other accountable. And there is a due process. So they learn about due process. But if you're if you're crossing the boundaries all the time, you must not want to be there. And the whole thing about Acton Academy is it's an opt-in thing. The people who are there because they want to be there. They choose to be there and they're on a mission for their life. And I think that that combination of accountability and ownership surprised us of how powerful that is and how young people take it so seriously. They know what a promise is. A six-year-old knows what it means when they sign their name on that line. And it's amazing the power that those promises hold.
Yeah. Is it, do you have a grading system, like a traditional grading system?
No. And so there are three ways you move up in an acting studio. So you basically move from one studio to another. The first one is we measure effort. So just how hard are you working on different things? We can talk about those things in a minute, but you're basically measuring effort. The second thing is you measure excellence. And so every 6 weeks, there's the end of a project and something must be delivered, just like in the real world. And you have a public exhibition where you have to serve the public. We can talk about that in a minute, but you have to deliver high quality work. Then the third one is there's these 360 peer reviews where each person is asked about each person. Are they tough-minded and warm-hearted? And so you get feedback and you get rated by your peers of how you're doing in the community. You have to do well on all three things, working hard, delivering great work, and then also serving as a good citizen. The way quality is judged is excellence is if you haven't ever done it before, did you give it your all? If you've done it before, was this time better than last time? And you actually put them side by side and measure. If you've actually gotten where you're so good, you've kind of plateaued, you're going to compare your short story to Hemingway or O. Henry or Master. Or if you've won some sort of kind of contest, then it's excellent. And the only work that counts is excellent work. But excellence is about getting better every day and every time. And then the young people judge each other's badges. And if your badges are approved, that's excellent work. And then the last piece, because this will make a lot of sense to you guys, there's a committee that judges excellence. And the only people that, by the way, that go on to that committee are people who care, right? Then we pick three people at random from the studio, and then we ask the studio confidentially who should be audited. So those six people are audited by the committee. And Melanie, if you approved my badge as excellent, but the committee disagrees, you lose 6 weeks of work and I lose 6 weeks of work. Okay. So if you log roll for your buddies, you can lose 6 months worth of work.
What's up? That's exactly how it needs to go.
They did that in Buds.
Yeah, that's so the ship. Excuse my language. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's so the turds or whatever we call them. What should we call them? They can't move forward. How you wash them out.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's all based on performance and very much as real world as you can possibly get.
Wow. So there aren't grade levels.
No, the studios are multi-age, so you've got all the elementary in one studio, maybe 36, same for the middle school, same for the high school. And also, the young people are moving between studios all the time. Somebody in the elementary studio might go up and help someone in the upper studio with calculus. So they're moving together. It's like a big family in neighborhoods that's always mixing.
Do you have a hard time finding teachers to go along with this?
It's a great question because adults are the hardest piece of this puzzle. We call them guides, not teachers. And we have found that someone who has a long background in the traditional teaching setting, this environment is too hard to unlearn all of those skills that you gained as a teacher. So we actually seek coaches, entrepreneurs, people who run camps, youth ministers, people who just understand children and care for them, but don't necessarily have to manage anything for the learning to happen. And the idea is that we're giving the tools to the young people so that the adult works themselves out of a job pretty quickly. And if you walked into an acting studio, you probably would have to look hard to see the adult.
Well, often there won't be an adult in there. In fact, we've got campuses with 130 learners and only two adults. And that counts janitorial, hiring and firing, everything. And so the biggest thing for an adult is no adult on campus is ever allowed to answer a question. Not one, not ever, not for any reason. All you can do is offer a choice. So if you ask me a question, all I can do is I can't answer it. I can offer you a choice. And then after a while, if I've done that enough, I can disappear because your classmates will offer you a choice. I don't even have to do that.
So your classmates can help each other.
Oh, yes.
But they have to be Socratic. They can't answer the question for you. They have to offer you choices as well.
That would be hard to break if you already had that one in you.
It's very hard.
It's very hard.
That's a hard one to break. Yeah. I can see that.
Most adults are either way too tough-minded, which would be me, or they're way too warm-hearted, like they want to rescue people. Sure. And so most of our time is trying to keep adults from rescuing or shaming and, you know, and let the learners learn from trial and error, making mistakes and getting back up.
Oh, it's just, it's so hard for, because adults do like to control and things get chaotic. I mean, that's part of the model, is letting things fall into chaos and then letting order arise as the young people figure out how to solve the problems.
Oh, sure.
But there's so many adults who just want to clean up the mess and make it look pretty for the parents when they come pick everybody up. And we just resist that, because you've got to step back and let the children take charge of their environment. But it is, that's the hardest thing, I think.
And then they build the most ordered, responsible community you can imagine. And almost everyone you ask will say, what's the best thing about acting? They'll say freedom. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a pause and they'll say, but you know, freedom comes with great responsibility.
Sure. Because with us, look what they did. They not only made it as like, hey, I'll just do it, but they made it a competition with us to see who could do it the fastest, which in our minds is like, oh, I mean, I don't even know how our kids survived. Cause I call us stunt parents. Cause I catch my kid doing something like, ah, that's pretty good kid, but get out of the way. Watch the, you know, if you remove that, the best way is to remove ourselves from it and let them work through that, the options.
Yeah.
I've seen a little bit what you're talking about with our two little ones. We have an 11 and 12 year old. We have a really close friend that has a daughter that is so freaking smart. I mean, off the charts smart. She's a senior this year at the local public school. And we opted for her to be our kid's math tutor because I don't understand how they're doing math anymore. I just don't get it. And they tell us we can't memorize the multiplication tables and stuff. Like it's really weird. But so I called her in. I'm like, can you help the kids? I cannot figure this out. It's driving me crazy. She will not give them an answer. She wants them to figure it. She teaches them how to get the answer. And then she will constantly give them problems of like similar questions to make sure they really understand it. And she won't leave until they actually understand it. Both of our little ones are acing math now. And the teachers are like, what are y'all doing different? And I said, a high schooler is teaching them. And it's so good for peer to peer.
Yes. That is so powerful. And you bring up, I think, a really important thing that young people want to learn and they want to work hard and they don't mind the struggle if you just sit by them or the growth mindset idea that if you're struggling, it means you're learning. If you're not struggling, there's no learning that's happening. So that idea, I think, is really important. And then you get that aha moment, that joy that the learner experiences when they figure it out. Yeah. And I have people walking through Acton Studios saying, you know, why are these children so happy? There's such a feeling of joy. And it's because, first of all, freedom is ending and they feel free, but they also get that inner experience of struggling through something and learning it on their own. And then they own it. And that it just feels good to go through that experience. When you're giving them answers, you're just robbing them of so much.
Yeah. So how are you coming up with the curriculum?
Well, I mean, this has been, you know, Laura and I were in the studios, in the elementary studio, and I was a middle school, high school guide for 12 years. So the answer is one day at a time. And, you know, we now have 22,000 pages of original material and linked to another 100,000 pages, but none of it would look like curriculum that you would imagine. I'll give you a quick example of these 6-week quests. If you were in middle school, quote, biology, which by the way, no one else even teaches biology in middle school, but we have that, you would study how to read blood tests, EKGs, all the medical things, which are now on the web. So you can take the same simulations a doctor and nurse takes. And at the end of this 6 weeks, Melanie, you would come in and there would be 30 or 40 adults as the public, and each of us would have a card deck of symptoms. So I'd walk in and say, let's imagine Marcus is a middle schooler. He's got a little lab coat on. I'd say, you know, my chest feels tight. And, you know, he would say, well, let's run an EKG. And then I would pull out a card and show him the EKG. That would cost $1,000. And he would keep asking questions till he diagnosed that I either had heartburn or I needed heart surgery. And so these learners learn how to actually, for real, diagnose medical conditions. And, you know, that's so biology is something you learn about your body so you can help people. And so every single thing we do has this real world component where you're learning something you're going to use in the real world.
Yeah, how it actually works.
Yeah.
Because why else would you learn something? I mean, you'll learn math and all the fundamentals, but you learn that to go do something, right, to fly an airplane or to help someone medically. There's a reason you learn things. And that's what we're all about.
That's one of my biggest problems with school, especially nowadays, because they've changed how we learn. Axe will come to me with something and I'm like, you just have to remember this to pass your test, because I promise you will never use this in your whole life. I am 44 and I've never seen where I need to use this problem. So just take your test and move on.
Well, but in all seriousness, I'll ask each of you, I'm curious what you'd say about this. What percentage of what you've learned and use in the world that's important did you learn in a classroom?
Very little. Very, very, very little. I would say almost everything I use today is just based off of what either my parents taught me or grandparents or a friend's parent, something like that.
I think a lot of it comes into play in different times in your life. I mean, and the way they teach us, sometimes it's not really applicable. I think because they're trying to say it a nice way. Mm-hmm. You said it earlier. Kids are freaking resilient. I mean, I even look at my seventh grader, and I was like, oh, he's still innocent. And then I think back when I was in seventh grade. And I'm like, all right, I probably need to tit this joker about some stuff. Because I've been in, especially in the military, I was at one of these schools when I was going through training, that half of the day we got taught military medicine, which is not just get in there and save your life. This is what I know, all the anatomy and physiology, how everything works in your body. I did get taught all that. And then there was civilian medicine. Like, you're only allowed to do this because in case something goes wrong with them. But it was the craziest thing. We had to separate the two so we could get our paramedics license.
That's really interesting. Yeah, there was a kind of the book way to do it and the real way to do it.
Yes, sir. And if we circle back around, what y'all are doing is putting those together.
Teaching.
It's manifesting that in your head to how it really, really works. And then you get to see an example of how it works differently, because every child is different when you manifest them for the first time.
Here's the recipe. Now, here's the model. It's pretty easy. I'm going to tell you a story and put you in the shoes of someone facing a difficult decision.
Yeah, those are awesome.
One of these challenges is Operation Red Wing. We put them in the shoes where you were in the book. I mean, that is actually an acting challenge. Then the question is, okay, what are you going to do next? We're going to provide examples so you know what the thing you're going to do next looks like. Then we're going to provide a recipe or an algorithm or a process, how you actually do it. And then some sort of game, and there's some way you win the game or there's points. And then we're going to get out of the way. And you're going to have to solve this problem with nothing more than a story to inspire you, an example, a recipe, and some way to play a game. And we're just going to repeat that over and over and over again in every walk of life.
There's a place,
you're part of the curriculum. Now, babe.
I know there's a place that we don't ever talk about. It's called the void. And it's where you actually exist when both of those worlds are colliding together. Mm. Like what you've been taught and what's coming at you. And I mean, you have no idea how you're going to react when you get in there. That's the greatest part about it. It's when it's hammering that thing in there. It's like, how detailed did you outline it to make it? And then there's always unknowns in there. We often say, hey, this is how this works. You know as well as I do, there is an exception to every rule, Walker. That's God's little humor. That's God's humor around here. He's like, hey, here's an exception to every rule in here. It'll come walking in there. It's the funniest thing.
Here's the one thing. You have to make a choice, right? And you have to have the courage to make a choice. And you're going to be wrong a lot. And so you have to just keep trying. And so you get knocked down, you do it again. But it's, but yeah, you do have to choose, right? You do have
absolutely
to
choose. That's when you realize the right and wrong slips out the door. And it's like, hey, is this working? Is this working? Or if it's not working?
And that's actually become an issue with today's children, is that they're so scared to try. They just won't. They're so scared to fail that they will not try. And that drives me.
They put more effort into not trying than they do. If you got to switch. Isn't that funny? Is that a duality in man? Well, that must be stitched into us too. Like if you don't take care of this thing, it will introvert, which I mean, is a nuclear bomb going off when a child isn't raised without any discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. Built into our model is that every six weeks you have to get up in front of an audience of community members and family members. We call it exhibition day, and just show what you've learned. And one of the, and very often that's where we see failure happen, and parents sitting through their child actually getting up in front of the group and not having done the work and still having to stand there and go through this exhibition. And we talk to the parents that to not think that that's a bad thing. That's part of the learning process. And to just talk about it, talk about the struggle. What is it like? But that little by little courage builds up. We had one of our high school students when he first came, and you can tell this story because he was just very close with Jeff. Yeah.
So this young man shows up and he's got a hoodie on and a skateboard. And, you know, he looks like somebody you'd be kind of scared to have at your school at first. Delightful guy. He gets up the first exhibition to give a speech, and the room's filled with 100 people. He's done all this work and he freezes. And he literally freezes, and they have to pick him up and take him off the stage.
Really froze. Okay.
Well, and by the way, our rule was you had to stand up there for 6 minutes before you could leave. And he stood there for 6 minutes and didn't move. And 6 minutes seemed like 6 hours in that case.
I was about to say, that takes a lot of courage to sit there and not say anything.
Well, so then he requests to have another exhibition that he can have a chance to try again. And he freezes the second time. Everybody comes back and he freezes. He comes back a third time and delivers the talk. And I will tell you without a doubt, that third time absolutely changed his life.
Aww.
And the courage he had to have for that third time was as much courage as I have ever thought about mustering.
It's everyone's biggest fear, right?
Yeah,
his biggest fear.
Biggest fear. And he kept coming back. It brings tears to my eyes just thinking about it.
He's such a great young man now.
So fabulous. But we see that happening even as young as six-year-olds. There was a six-year-old who was we have Socratic discussions at the beginning and the end of every day. And this one six-year-old was afraid to speak for about 4 months. She just did not participate at all. And you know, the parents were afraid, the guide was afraid. And then one day, she so eloquently disagreed with the older student who had just said something. And the whole group just broke out in applause because they finally heard her voice. And it wasn't that she didn't have anything to say. She just needed to be there long enough to figure out that she was ready to use her voice. And then, boy, there was no there was no turning back after that point. But some children, it just takes, you know, it's a slow burn to get to that point. And then they're solid and they can do it. But giving them time and space, everyone grows at their own pace. And I think that's why the mixed age grouping is so powerful, because sometimes it's a seven-year-old who's the best in math and a nine-year-old, you know, the seven-year-old has to help the nine-year-old. It's not always the older ones helping the younger ones. It gets all mixed up, and it builds such empathy within the group, because you don't assume that the older ones are the powerful ones, or, you know, that everybody's got a gift and people are looking for the gift in each other. And that's our bottom line, is that we believe every single child is a genius who is deserves to find a calling and change the world. So there's a respect about amongst the individuals, because each person has something, even if it takes a while to figure out what that something is.
I had to learn that going through sniper school, just to relate to that, because when you're sitting there and someone's talking, trying to describe, this is how I learned it. I had a buddy of mine. I'm like, hey, describe what you're seeing. We weren't allowed to look at it. He was looking at the targets, and I had to look at something else while he was trying to describe it to me. And I was just getting quiet. I would stay, you know, we'd stay quiet, but you realize that there's a separation between the decades and between youth, because they see things differently.
Hmm.
And they don't know how to explain it to you. That's why they stay quiet. Like, hey, man. Yeah. And then finally I was like, hey, man, why do you see it like that? How'd you learn it like that? Or whatever environment it was you were born from that implemented in that way into your mind, I need to see it. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like Mel was talking earlier, a great teacher, like there's ways to explain things. And then there's someone will just drop logic on you. And that's when everyone in the room is like, oh, I get exactly what you're saying. Not only that, I can explain it in my way and in yours.
Yeah.
And that,
that's
you know what I'm talking about? When they do that, that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
When your kids are just starting out, the young ones, what are some of the hero stories that you're teaching them?
Well, it's everything, you know, Aesop's fables to, I mean, we do the Iliad, we do biographies. They love to hear stories of real people and what they really wanted to do. But then, you know, we throw in Nemo or Lion King. It's Founding Fathers, Harry Potter. I mean, children eat those stories up, but there's something about real world heroes. They really, and there's wonderful collections of biographies written for young children. And we just keep stacks of those around and talk about them all the time. And they love to map the hero. They love to have a story read out loud and then map the hero's journey to that story. So when did that person hear a calling? Who was that person's mentor? What was the trap they fell into? When did they enter the cave? And we use Joseph Campbell's quote, "The cave you fear to enter is where your treasure lies." So the moment you feel really scared to do something, that's where you've got to go, because that's where you're going to learn the most. And so they try to figure out, you know, when a character or a person in history really had to enter the cave that they feared. So those stories, we talk, even Dr. Seuss's stories, right. We read all those out loud all the time, and they're wonderful hero stories to share with children.
That's so awesome.
That, when that fear starts tingling inside of you, that's almost like a homing beacon.
Yeah,
true.
And being afraid is different. That's like your Spidey. I call it my Spidey sense. When that sucker starts tangling, you definitely know.
Yes.
When that fear kind of beacon shows up, you're like, okay, that, you know, all right, this is a way.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, we love to talk about fear, and we all read The Gift of Fear.
That's
Gavin,
a great book. Yeah,
and being able to assess your own fear. Is it being afraid, or is it something you really should be afraid of and do something about, or are you nervous inside? So to really analyze what that feeling is, for a young person to reflect on their fear and their nerves and their, you know, the difference between the two, I think is a pretty powerful experience.
Oh yeah. You know how much that helps?
Yeah.
Because normally when you're growing up, that's come in segments.
Yeah.
Like courage, commitment, those are different. The bravery, you got to put that in there first of all. And then right ahead of that is fear. So then you got to have somebody kick you in the butt. That's got to be where the adult's for, right? Get your ass in there. Once you start, you'll be good. That kind of thing.
Well, and you learn that, you know, I mean, courage isn't the absence of fear. It's actually even when you are.
That's right.
If you're not scared, you're crazy.
Amen, brother.
Yeah. Marcus says that all the time.
Amen. Oh, yeah. Well, hey, if you've been through it, that's why you say it. Anyone who says that they know exactly what that means. It's kind of like when people say glass is half empty. I was like, well, dude, your ass ain't never been thirsty. Because
let
me say
so
something.
Good.
You know what
that's,
I mean?
That's right.
So how are the kids, the older ones that are going to college, how are colleges assessing their acceptance with GPA and all that stuff?
Well, we've been really surprised by that. First, we have a way to translate everything we do into a normal high school transcript for college. So our transcripts look exactly like a high-end, you know, private school in Austin, because I copied their template. It looks exactly like that.
Okay.
So what surprised us is no college has ever asked about any of our acting, the ones from our school, the transcripts. So it's been fine. The real question, which is very different, is do our graduates need college at all? Mm. And the answer to that question is no. Yeah. Now, they may get a college degree, but our two sons are in college now, and the stuff they're studying, they learned in middle school at Acton.
That's not why you go there anymore.
Yeah.
You know that. You go there. Yeah, that's not why you go to them anymore.
Yeah. So this idea of you spend $300,000 for a worthless piece of paper. Just think that's over with. Just is going to take it a while. I don't think the value's there. And A lot of our learners go straight into industry. Like, you know, you don't have to go to engineering school. You can go to SpaceX and get a job if you're really good at engineering. And yeah. So a lot of them are going straight into the world. Some will go ahead and go to college and really good colleges, but they have a reason. College is a tool. It's not an excuse. It's not a playground. It's a tool.
What? Oh, it's evolved again. That's exactly what this is. Like when then the internet came online and computers and technology, as soon as that information came in, you knew it was a matter of time before somebody sharpened all that.
Yeah.
And threw it into one spot where you could go. It was basically you brought back around the apprenticeship. So yeah. If you come out of there with that tag on your arm, like in the military, you know exactly what that means and what those, because you teach confidence in there, because with being able to get up in front of anybody and do that, you show them their fears and then they want to.
Well, you think about a lot of our learners will have had five or six full apprenticeships by the time they get through high school, and including some really high end. I mean, working for famous people because they're so capable. And then you look at that and go, would you rather hire that person or somebody with a 3.0 out of a no-name college? And that's why they get hired. And sometimes it's very hard to even think about college because they've got such a good offer to already go to work. And once you've worked at SpaceX or Microsoft or Google, no one really asks about your college degree.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, absolutely.
So it includes tech, so it's including all of the stuff that Google would want or any of those tech companies?
Yeah, that's a complicated question. I mean, really what most employers, and having been one and employed a lot of people, what you really want to know is, what is someone smart enough and capable, and more importantly, do they really care enough to do what you want them to do? And so we have all the tools necessary to figure that out. But when you meet these young people, it's not even a close call. I mean, it's not when you hear them speak and you can hear them reason and they know exactly what they want to do in life. They've got a plan.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you just can't wait to find something you hope they'll come do with you. So it's so far beyond what you see with a normal high school graduate or the normal college graduate that there's almost no comparison.
Are you following all of your graduates?
Yes. And they're very loyal and they come back all the time.
That's awesome. And they all have success stories of getting good jobs?
Well, I mean, the answer to that is yes, but it's really a hard question. I'll let you answer. I'm like, what is success? Right.
What is a good job? Right. What is a good job?
Really, that depends
on who's doing that, right?
Well, and it's fun because they're each on their own journey. And so what I see is that they're fully engaged in their own personal journeys and they're thriving out in the real world. What they miss, or what some of them miss, is the community of like-minded people who also are on a mission. Sure. To do something important with their lives. And so they love to connect with each other as graduates of Acton, because they're like, you get it. We're on a hero's journey. We want to do something important. I'm tired of being around friends who don't want to talk about anything meaningful. You know, so they want to now form an alumni group that they share their next great adventure with each other and help inspire each other, because that's what they were doing at Acton. I also want to interject here that we don't take credit for any of these. Yeah. When Jeff says, you know, they're doing such wonderful things, it's because that's what humans do.
Yeah.
And we just got lucky to be in a situation. You know, 14 years ago, it was just seven kids plus me in a little house. We had no plan. We didn't know this would go anywhere. But when you really respect kids and you trust them and you set basic boundaries and set them free, humans are amazing. And we just give all the credit to the courageous parents who said, yeah, okay, we'll trust you, go for it. And also those young children who were brave enough to come in and try something new. And it is just blossomed beyond anything we take any credit for at all.
I mean, it's incredible what y'all are doing. And you're raising the next generation of leaders that we need. And if they're not leaders, they're at least giving to our communities somehow.
Can't believe how far a personality will take you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And confidence.
I mean, you can't believe it.
Yeah.
Sometimes we forget to download that and all the smart kids. Well, like, you have to be able to wield that sword.
Absolutely. No.
At a young age, when you're able to just sit down at a table and there's a senior sitting you off and it's like, hey, let's go ahead and talk about this and we can lay it all out on it. Because at that age, you look down on them. You look down on them.
Right.
That, you know what I mean? And so the ability, that's that confident and courage. I would imagine that they don't find that. You know how hard it is to talk to somebody on the level, and anybody who's trying, an employer, once when they say experience, that's what they're looking for. Hey, can you talk to me and tell me what you want? Moreover, can I see what you want?
That's right.
Well, we were talking before we went on the air about, you know, our oldest son, Charlie, went to Athens, now a Marine and about to be a Marine aviator. Yeah.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And I'll tell you, though, he did OCS this summer and then went back to college. And he was probably a little iffy on college before. But Marcus, you know what it means to go through and have the seriousness and to wear the uniform and do. And then you come back and there's people drinking and screwing around. It's just not very interesting. And so
changes.
Each of our acting graduates is like that. When they go out in the real world, they're operating at a level that's different than most people. And they want to then go work for really high performance companies and teams and start their own businesses. I mean, they're at the top because they've been in an environment, they've experienced that. And it's no fun to live at a slower pace anymore.
Sure. That's the difference between people who when they put a front on, that'll go away. When it gets hard, when stuff starts really getting difficult, those people wash out. If someone's really capable of that, they'll stand right in there. As a matter of fact, they won't even notice it. Well, they won't even notice it.
I'll tell you the biggest difference of acting and when you get out and go into the college world, you're going to have to make a choice whether you want to be prestigious or competent. Mm. Yeah. And our learners are always going to pick competent.
Yeah. Who cares about
that? Because
it drags the other one with it. It drags other one with it.
Yeah.
Real. My father would do the discipline respect thing with me. He goes, hey, look, I give you my respect and that everyone respects me will come with that. But if I don't give you any discipline, you can't hold it. It's like, but if I give you discipline, then you'll get your respect. And every man wants that. That's why you earn money. That's why you get an education. For whatever that word really means, whatever that activates inside of us is important. I've noticed that.
Yes.
The lowest common denominator. I mean, that might be our pure animal instinct, respect.
Yeah.
And when someone opens their mouth, you know immediately. Not on a text message, when they got to actually look at you and communicate, because you can see it in their face. And that, you have to match those words with that expression. And that takes time, because you have to reflect that off of other people to see if it works for you.
Yeah.
And those young kids that can do that, that's the most impressive thing to me, is when they can belt that out. That's how you know you got a great parent. Say anything you want about that sucker. If those kids are squared away, let him do his thing.
Yeah.
So speaking of acting, you've got that down pat. Y'all have franchised schools across the world, right? I mean, you have it in different countries. So what about the business fair that you do, the Acting Business Fair?
That's a fun story. That's our favorite.
Those are so much fun. It's actually probably doing much more good even the Acting Academy. So Charlie and Sam came to us when they were 6 and 7. Wanted to start not a lemonade stand, but business card and invite their friends. And we started with, I think, 6 booths by 6 young entrepreneurs, and they were selling cocoa or cookies and different things. And the next year, another group showed up and it was twice as big, and then it doubled again and doubled again. And now we just had our 1900th children's business fair in, I think, 516 cities around the world. And so these fairs where people come together and these young people put on their booths and sell their materials, they're the single most fun thing we do. And there, you know, I think there were 22 this weekend around the world.
How do you?
And there's roughly 20 every week.
So how do people go to something like that? Where do you put the word out?
Well, Children's Business, actingchildrensbusinessfair.com. And you can go there if you want to host one. And it automatically creates a website for you. We put up $500 of prize money. Just our family does, just out of wanting to help it. It's free. And, you know, your first one, you might have 10 people show up. So you can do this for your kids that are still at home. You know, have them find 5 friends, put up a website, invite the neighbors over. And what you'll find is every year it will double in size until you reach capacity. And they are so much fun.
Are they usually at someone's house or at a community center or
either? I mean, sometimes they start at houses, sometimes community centers.
Yeah. And so each local host is in charge of spreading the word locally to get shoppers there. And each booth owner, each child who has a business is responsible to market the fair to get people there to shop.
Hey, there's only one rule. Parents can't help.
Yeah.
Adults have to stay out of the way. And, you know, the children learn to make something with their own hands, sell it safely to somebody they don't know, and have money left over after when they're finished.
Yeah.
And if there's any recipe for the American dream, it's those three things.
Yeah. And the kids pocket all the money, and it is.
Until they get home and the old man comes over and is like, all right, this is the man. I'm going to take half that.
Right. There you go.
I do that to my kid. I'm like, hey.
Taxes.
Yeah, that's right.
So they learned so much. And, you know, once again, so many mistakes. There were years where our boys didn't, you know, make enough money to make to make a profit, or they, you know, didn't sell anything. And those are great lessons too. And sure. It can be painful, but it actually is so much fun. And that's such a low cost way to do a lot of good. Yeah.
Out of all of the ones that y'all have participated in, what's the craziest thing you've seen a kid trying to sell?
Oh my gosh.
Well, we did have our boys shooting paintball. you could pay to shoot Sam, which was their booth one year, paintball, and poor Sam, our son, was having to run back and forth. And
sure,
you know,
hey, the most deadly game. Who doesn't love that book, right?
But we, you know, bacon on a stick was really popular one year. What's your favorite?
Well, I think we had this young girl, first time we had a young girl named Michaela, who was 4 and a half, and she came in a bumblebee suit, and she was selling her grandmother's lemonade. And then she came back again and again. And a few years later, she was on Shark Tank and she raised $300,000. And now she runs a major lemonade company. Yeah,
that's the story I wanted to hear right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So Sweet Bee Lemonade. And it's a major, you know, brand.
It's in Whole Foods, HEB. Yeah. So, she's amazing.
So there've been a handful of people actually make real businesses. You know, and make a lot of money out of their business.
There needs to be an American dream table book.
That's what they're doing.
That's a great idea.
That,
you know,
is
I'm talking about with someone like that, with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I think's got the best one of the best American dream stories, coming over here doing that.
Yes.
The way he did it. I mean, there's prime examples. The one, what was the young lady's name you just said? What was her name?
Michaela.
Yeah, her. And just thumb through that just to see that it's possible.
All right, that's another project y'all can do.
Okay, yeah, that would be fun. I would love to do that, actually.
I'd buy it.
Okay, so was she an Acton student or just anybody?
No, she never went to Acton. That's why I think it's my favorite, because not everybody's going to go to Acton, and Acton's not for everybody, but just about every kid wants to make something and sell it. And so that is just a powerful experience for anybody.
I think we've had 99,500 kids come to the business fair so far. So it's not just Acton. It's just people all over.
Anybody.
And so how can kids actually sign up, like find one that's local?
Well, they just go to that website and see if there's one in your town. I mean, one nearby. But truly, the next thing is to really go ask your parents and say, can I do one with 5 booths or 6? Because you can put one on with a few card tables in your front yard, and then it'll just grow on its own. So a lot of times children will just convince their parents to have one.
That's a great idea for around us, too. The neighborhoods are kicking up. It'd be suburb
great.
Kind of deal. Right.
Yeah.
And they have parks inside the neighborhoods around here.
Nice.
It's fun to meet your neighbors. I mean, it's one of the most positive things we've ever done. They're all fun.
So
come to find out, actually hanging out with your neighbors is a great time.
Yes. Yeah. What a great concept.
What a great concept. I'm getting to know that myself. It took me a little bit. I'm truthful. I'm being completely honest
it's
here.
It's hard for us. We live.
Well, it's just hard for most veterans too. When you get back, they don't like doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm hardest on especially the vets now. I'm like, get your asses out in town.
Yeah.
And let everybody see you. I mean, you're scary looking anyways. So they're not going to come up to you. You got to go out to them and meet them. And
Marcus decided to find where all the old men in the town have coffee in the morning.
Oh, I love that.
And that's so how I started recon the town.
He started going and sitting with them and just getting to know them. And so every Friday he has a standing date with all of the old men in the town.
Oh, that's such a gift.
That is beautiful.
When I get it, my brother and I, when we came here, I didn't know anybody. So initially our plan was, we drew it out. I was like, let's go recon, find that town elders. And the town elder, the female, she was 103. She just passed away, Celeste Graves. So we go have coffee with her. And there's a coffee shop over where the other ones sit. And then from there, I went to the firehouses. Just, you know, it took me months to let everybody see you, know who you are.
That's huge.
Just keep kind of going around. And that's how you...
It's building that community.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you get to know everybody. Yeah. I remember growing up in high school, we knew everybody. And even if you went back and forth, if you had a problem, hell, we looked out for each other.
Yeah, that's right.
I had a great childhood because of
that. Very bizarre childhood.
I do have a bizarre childhood. I think, I mean, I have the best crew known to man.
Don't have childhoods like that. Like, everybody in his hometown knows who they are, not because of...
I mean, knows.
Lone Survivor or anything like that. Like, they've known them since they were kids. They were in the newspapers when they were kids. Like,
I had a great town.
They just had a crazy story.
Great.
But
I had great teachers. I mean, it was... I've had a lot of time to reflect now, sir. You know, she's kind of calmed me down. I don't move like I used to.
Normal. Don't think that's normal.
I'll just apologize right now to everyone that helped raise me. I love you. And I you know, when I was a kid, I know it was tough. I know it was tough. Thanks for not throwing me away.
Well, we love what y'all have created with Acton Academy and with the business fair. We're definitely going to look that up with our little ones and see if they can get involved with something like that. Is there any other success stories or anything you want to tell us about your students or former students?
No, I just think it's the thing I would leave you with is that, and you know this, but children are just capable of far more than we've ever imagined. And they just need a chance to go try. Yeah. They really are. That's been the biggest surprise of this. I had high hopes, but I've been completely blown away. And I think Laura has too, over and over again, by what these young people can do. And we just hold them back by not expecting them to be heroes.
Yes. And I've just learned, if you have a problem or a question, sit down with a child or an elder like you're doing, but ask a child to help you out. They can solve problems and their ideas are it's just amazing to me. So yes, that's our takeaway. And we're just grateful. And we thank you for this time with you. This is really, really nice to be with you.
Yeah, but that's a great way to, I never heard it said like that, because when you ask a child something, they'll tell you
the truth.
They'll freaking throw it out there.
Yes.
And the elder, they'll say the same thing, but it has some wallet behind it, like some experience. Like, you're like, hey, I feel like you road tested that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's short and sweet usually. And I get to the point now to where especially if I see that December up there, or if he's got it in the beard, it's white.
He's saying gray hair.
Gray hair, white hair. There's a difference. That spirit, you know what I'm talking about? When you see one, I'm like, hey, give me something. I know you got a cool phrase, some wisdom. Sometimes people look at me like I'm the craziest damn thing ever. But I'm like, come on, I know you got something. Can't be around all this time and not have something cool you throw out. And they normally do, but they laugh about it. They're like, yeah, you know, I got something for you, man. Hold on.
Well, I'm all about promoting change makers. And that's what y'all are doing, is actually changing the trajectory of how our kids are being raised, because the traditional school system sucks. And I come from teachers. My dad's parents were teachers. My mom's parents were teachers. My aunts were teachers. So it's not that I'm anti-education. It's how our school system now is set up. It's going the wrong way. And our kids are lacking confidence. They're lacking, they have so much anxiety. I mean, you see kids now in high school on Xanax because they have this high anxiety. All that comes from is a lack of confidence. Yep. And what you're doing with the Acton Academy is actually teaching kids to shine. It's not, you're not giving them anything that they don't already have inside them. You're just pulling it out of them and allowing them to have that platform. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate y'all coming out here. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And can you say the website one more time just for our listeners? And if there's any.
Yeah. So the Children's Business Fair is actinchildrensbusinessfair.org. Or if you just Google Children's Business Fair, it shows up. Mm-hmm. And then actinacademy.org is for the school.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank
I can sit down and talk to you about freaking raising these kids all day long.
I know. It would be fun. We'd love it.
We're looking forward to seeing you in person.
Yes, sir. Hey, God bless y'all. Y'all take care.
Bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.